Okay, so we're going to continue our study of Sefer Shoftim. Thank you everybody for coming. And we had started Perek Vav, chapter 6, last time. And we're back to one of the downward cycles. It's one of the downward parts of the cycle of Klal Yisrael and their history in the book of Shoftim. And where they're under the control of now Midian, a foreign nation Midian, for 7 years. Pasuk Aleph told us it was 7 years. And perhaps we would say unique to this specific, you know, time of punishment, there seems to be an aspect of cruelty on the part of the Midianites against Klal Yisrael. And there's definitely nothing indicative from the Psukim themselves in terms of what did the Jewish people do at this time to kind of deserve that. When we have Pasuk Aleph, we had mentioned it's that generic language of Vayasu v'nei Yisrael hara b'nei Hashem. The Jewish people do what's evil in the eyes of Hashem, and therefore he gives them over into the hands of Midian. Actually, notice something. I do not know if there's significance to this at all, but if you take a look, if your Pasuk Aleph has the cantillation notes, the notes that go underneath the Pasuk, there seems to be almost like an exact setup between the first half of the pasuk and the second, in that Vayasu Bnei Yisrael has a, under the Vayasu is a Zarka, and Bnei Yisrael, the notes are exactly the same in the first half. Vayasu Bnei Yisrael hara b'nei Hashem, and then it's almost a carbon copy, Vayitnem Hashem b'yad minyan shavashanim. And it's almost like even through the Mesorah of how to read the pasuk, there's this direct relationship that we're hearing, that it's when the Jews do bad, so then Hashem gives them over into the hands of an enemy. Why this time it's so cruel, I don't necessarily have a definitive approach, because the Pesukim that we read, just reviewing it out loud, from Pasuk Gimel through Pasuk Hey, was how they cut off the ability for there to be a proper food supply, and for there to be then having proper animals, because if you can't feed yourselves, you can't feed your animals. And the Midianites are bringing in their own livestock in order to take up, and these are a comparison to Arba, they're almost acting like a locust, taking any nourishment that the earth will give forward. We are going to make reference very soon to Mitzrayim. And to making a reference, Pesach seems to play a role in this, at least behind the scenes in this perek. And maybe that's some type of connection in a little bit of a bigger picture way. We know that there were certain, obviously in Parsha Shavua were involved. There's definitely an aspect of the servitude that was in Egypt, on the one hand economical, and other aspects of it that seem to be cruel. It doesn't appear to be that Paro was trying to make the most money that he could off the Jews. There were definitely aspects of the work, both in terms of the psukim in themselves, like we had at the end of last week, in the end of Parsha Shmos, when Paro takes away the straw and makes the slaves themselves create, you know, get their own straw and make their own bricks, that's not going to produce more for him, but it will subjugate them more. It will put more of a burden, more of a pain on them. It's almost for the cruelty. And in the Midrashic literature, Mitzrayim is full of cruelty, of giving, you know, men the work that's meant for women the work that's meant for men, building cities that couldn't stand, all those types of statements. So maybe there's some type of parallel to Mitzrayim, and that's why Midian was specifically cruel. Maybe that's the reference to the Arba. I mean, why would the Tanakh use that term when Midian is coming with tons of animals or whatever to ruin anything that's growing from the ground, and it calls it like Arba, like locusts. Okay, so maybe we'll see. And it created the situation. I don't remember if we read Pasuk Vav, but that's where we'll start from now. Vayidal Yisrael ma'od mipnei Midyan. Israel was extremely destitute, poor, ma'od, very much so, mipnei Midyan, because of Midyan. Vayitzaku Yisrael, b'nei Yisrael al Hashem. And the b'nei Yisrael cry out to Hashem. They're crying out to Hashem. So until now, we've always been explaining the crying out to Hashem. That is the beginning of the tshuva process. It would appear from the psukim that we'll see as the parak develops, maybe more so in this specific instance of the nation needing to do tshuva, it was exactly that. It was a process. And that they were not wholehearted in their tshuva just yet. As we'll see, it's going to be apparent from the psukim, there's at least, if not more than, a dual belief going on in many of the people, which we see at other times in Tanakh as well, that not in every instance of the Jewish people worshipping Avodah Zarah is it that they deny Hashem totally. It's that they're maybe incorporating that there are multiple truths, that there are multiple gods, and yes, there is a Hashem, but there's also the God of other nations that we choose to embrace. And obviously, any amount of letting in anything, all right, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, there's no such thing. It has to be one. So on the one hand, we're seeing the phrase Vayizaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem. On the other hand, the Perek is going to show us that the Jews are not yet wholehearted, which also means that they're not yet deserving of full salvation, because the two always flow together. Vayihi pasuk zayin, vayihi ki za'aku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem, and it was when the Jews were crying out to Hashem, al odos Midyan, because of or on account of Midyan. Pasuk ches, vayishlach Hashem ish navi el b'nei Yisrael. Hashem sent them a prophet, ish navi, a man who's a navi, el b'nei Yisrael, to the Jewish people. Vayomer, and the prophet says as follows. Now I'm not sure why the psukim are divided as such, in the sense that hearing pasuk Zion sounds like it's half a sentence, right? Vayihi ki zaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem al ados Midyan. You would expect that to be a semi pause. Have that be the first half. And then say, Vayishlach Hashem ish Navi al b'nei Yisrael, end the pasuk there. And then you would say what the Navi actually said. I don't have any reasons for why it's divided this way. Maybe, again, we're trying to develop a theory that there's a process happening here. And that's the process of tshuva. So almost hearing a sentence unto itself, that they're continuing, but as they were crying out to Hashem because of Minyan, meaning they cried out to Hashem. Then we have another pasuk. And as they were crying out to Hashem, and now Hashem sends a Navi, it kind of hints to this concept of process, of steps, of not full-on tshuva. Now Hashem sends them an ish Navi, a Navi, which is a little bit unique, because up until this point, we keep having the Shofet come, and the Shofet is the one who provides the salvation. The Shofet is this quasi-political military leader, quasi-spiritual leader. And even in the sense of Devorah, she seems to be purely spiritual, but she's there. She happens to be present on the battlefield. She is the one leading them to do the full tshuva, and she's the one who brings about the salvation, right? And because she's insistent on her involvement, it's not referred to as the Shira of Barak. It's referred to as the Shir of Barak. It's referred to as Shiras Devorah. She's the heroine from beginning to end. Here we have a Navi playing a role. The Navi comes in, and then exits stage left. And then the Navi is not going to be there. Then the Shofet comes on the scene. And the Shofet is not the Navi. Chazal are of the interpretation, which we need to discuss, and Rashi quotes it from Seder Olam, which is a Midrashic type of text, who explains who is the Navi? None other than Pinchas. Pinchas is still alive, still around, still prophesizing, which we need to deal with.
But a Navi is on a higher hierarchy than a Shofet.
Is it a Navi on a hierarchy than a Shofet? Perhaps. Perhaps the question that we don't have a good answer for is, well, if there is a Navi, which clearly there is, why isn't that enough? Why? And the other question that we have in the back of our heads, which I want to get to after we read the pasuk, is if it is Pinchas, where's he been? Where, you know, if we're saying it's Pinchas, that means, you know, obviously we're going to have to play the miracle card of, right? What we did last time when we started Perek Vav is we caught up the history. We said if you count out, if you put aside the 12 years that Shmuel is officially maybe the last Shofet, which he's discussed in his Sefer, and the 40 years of his predecessor, his Rebbe, Eli HaKohen, who was Shofet for 40 years. If you take those 52 years out of the Cheshbon, of the probably about 370 years that the time period of the Shoftim existed, so you're down to about 320 years. And we said that as we start Perek Vav, we're pretty much midway chronologically, which means it's been about 160 years since Yehoshua died, and then 180 years since they left Mitzrayim. So if Pinchas is alive, you're clearly playing some type of elongated life miracle card, which Chazal do all the time, and it's not a problem for us, but it creates the question of where's he been? Not only where has he been for the last 7 years of being under control of Midian, I don't know, where was he in the time of Devorah? Devorah is no longer, right? Devorah is no longer. That's the assumption is that when it says, you know, like when Perek Hey concluded and it said Vatishkota Aretz Arbim Shana, so that's then her time, her tkufa has finished. And that's why in the absence of Devorah, we went ahead and have the downfall. Perhaps it's after a little bit of time. And in addition, we pointed out that maybe it was more significant in the fact that Perek Vav did not begin with the word Vayosifu, to do bad. They added to do bad. It went back to almost like, meaning what Devorah had done left an impact. It wasn't lasting forever, but it was significant. So what does the Navi say? Vayomer Lahem, in the middle of, back to the middle of Pasuk Ches, Vayomer Lahem, the Navi says to them, the Navi says to Klal Yisrael, what that means, we didn't hear of any gathering, but the Navi says to Klal Yisrael, Ko'amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, so says Hashem, the God of Israel, which is classic Ko'amar, that's the classic type of nevuah, that's official nevuah language for all Nevi'im, not Moshe Rabbeinu, they prophesize with the Ko'amar. Moshe Rabbeinu was Daber. Moshe Rabbeinu was Daber al B'nai Yisrael, because Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah is for all binding of all generations. All other Nevi'im prophesize with Ko'amar Hashem. So here he is prophesizing, Ko'amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Elkei Yisrael, the God of Israel, Anochi Ha'alesi Aschem Mitzrayim, I, God, have brought you up from Egypt, and I saved you from the house of slavery. Pasuk Tes. Va'atzil eschem miyad Mitzrayim, and I saved you from the hand of Egypt. U'miyad kol lochatzehem, and in addition to Egypt, lochatzehem means your people, right? Lochitz lachatz, right? What is lachatz in modern Hebrew? Lachatz is like a pressure. Right, so the Metzudos Tzion says this is inyan dochek when you're oppressed. So lochatzehem means your oppressors. Umiyad lochatzehem meaning future oppressors post Egypt. Ve'agaresho sam ipnehem, and I, God, who drove them out from before you. Ve'tne lachem es artzam, and I gave you their land. Pasuk Yud. Va'omra lachem, and I said to you, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. Lo siru es Elokei ha'amori, you should not fear the gods of the Amorim. And I don't think necessarily that we're picking on the gods of the Amorim more than any other false gods. Why we give the example of the Amorim, I'm not quite sure, as opposed to saying some type of generic language of like Eloheihem, their gods. Why Amori is singled out, I don't know, because it also in the sense that right now we're talking about Midian. Midian is the current ruling country. So, you know, maybe you would have said Elokei Midian. Why Amor, I'm not sure. But
in whose land do you dwell?
No, so that meaning it says Asher Atem Yoshvim Baratzam, that you're living in their land, but they're living in all the nations of Canaan. Why pick the Amori? I don't know for certain. But the message is that I am God, you shouldn't fear other gods, velo shematim bekoli, and you didn't listen to my voice. Ad kan, until here are the words of the Navi, and then it would appear that the Navi, you know, exit stage left, that a Navi is not on the scene. And the role of the Navi seems to be like all role, I mean, the common theme of prophets is to get the people to do tshuva. The majority of our Nevi'im attempt to get the people to do tshuva. Unfortunately, the majority of the Nevi'im throughout Klal Yisrael's history are not successful in getting the people to do tshuva. That's why the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yomi did it this week, made the statement that Haman accomplished more with getting Achashverosh to take off his ring than all 48 male prophets and 7 female prophets that the Jewish people ever had. Because when he took off the ring, Klal Yisrael felt the pressure and did tshuva. And hence the holiday of Purim, as opposed to so many of the prophets and prophetesses tried to get the people to do tshuva, and they weren't successful. So the goal of this Navi is to get the people to do tshuva. And again, as we've been explaining, the people are on a path to tshuva. It's a journey. And the Navi is playing a certain role to, maybe you would say, push it forward to the next level. By giving this message of, Hashem is the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. Hashem told you what you should be believing, and you didn't listen. To which the Baal Teshuva is supposed to say, Chatasi, I sinned, and now I do tshuva. Meaning, by the Navi bringing it up and almost explaining maybe what you think is the obvious, it allows for the tshuva process to develop. What's clear is that the Tanakh itself, and the Sefer itself, and even if you want to say beyond that, Shmuel HaNavi, who writes the Sefer according to Chazal, it's almost not considered to be important to know who the Navi was. What seems to be crucial is that we know that there was a Navi. Chazal interpret that the Navi is Pinchas, like we did one time towards the beginning of the Sefer. Before we were introduced to any Shoftim, there was a gathering where there was a Navi, and Chazal said the same thing, that it was Pinchas. And it raises the question of, if it's Pinchas, where is he up until now? Why doesn't he play a role during the time of Asniel, the first Shofet, and Ehud, and Shamgar, and Devorah, and Yao? Why is Pinchas not their right-hand man? And I don't necessarily think you're going to have a good answer, other than the fact that a Navi, and some of the Mefarshim explain along these lines, a Navi, and it's hard for us to understand because we've never had a Navi only does what Hashem says so. And on the instances where a Navi is supposed to come forward and make a public statement, they do so. And at any other point, if this truly was Pinchas, at any other point in his life, Hashem was not commanding him to be on the national scene, and so he wasn't. And he was not tasked. And some Mefarshim explain that it's even clear that during his, according to Chazal, during his elongated life, he didn't always serve as the acting Kohen Gadol. That he had descendants of his own be Kohen Gadol while he was alive, which clearly states that there was a time and a place for him to have a public role, and it wasn't constant. And we don't have like a claim against Pinchas, Chas v'Shalom. Pinchas was there, and everything's being guided. Everything's being guided by the divine. And so the Navi comes, and the Navi says his piece. And it almost sounds like the camera goes off that scene, and now we enter a different scene. And in scene one, which involved the Navi, we were not involving the Shofet at all. And for all we know, never the two shall meet, meaning that the Navi's involvement, and now we're going to see that we're going to be introduced to the next Shofet. The next Shofet is named Gideon. I don't know if it's making a full comeback, but the name's out there, Gideon. And so, did they know each other? Nothing's clear from the pasuk itself. So Pasuk Yud Aleph, we're shifting scene. Vayavo Malach Hashem. A angel of Hashem, a Malach. A Malach, there are different times, right, that the word Malach is used. This would appear that Malach Hashem, we're actually talking, right, sometimes we go out of our way to explain that the Torah used the word Malach, but it's not a Malach. This seems to be that it was Malach, an angel. Vayavu Malach Hashem vayeshev tachas ha'ela asher be'ofra. An angel of Hashem came and was sitting tachas ha'ela, under an ela. An ela is a type of a tree. It's a certain type of tree. So your book says an oak. My book says an elm tree. And your translation says... It doesn't have a specific name.
No.
So that's safer. I believe that's safer. to do. And that's why the Mitzidos Tzion, when he defines, again, I believe he's in the 1600s writing the definitions, he just says it's a Shem Ilan, the name of a tree. He doesn't give a specific. You'd have to maybe do some type of comparative study in Tanakh when it says Tachas Ha'Ela. Does that ever define it? But that's a great example. Like, what in the world? And I love Art Scroll, but how did they know elm and Judaica Press says oak? I mean, these are different trees. Obviously these things don't make a difference, but in a way that they do, in the sense that if we're translating words of Tanakh, we shouldn't do it willy-nilly. We shouldn't do it, you know, without there should be a Masorah how to translate. So we'll give them the benefit of the doubt because they deserve it. They're great people involved in these works. There must be some tradition one way or some tradition another way. But it's important, you know, it's nice to note that the Mitzudos Tzion, who probably knew more, just went more basic in terms of the translation. Now, it's the second time that we're involving a tree. If you recall the Devorah story, we made note that Devorah sat under a tree, which is, you know, we explained there that it was a palm tree. A palm tree is a date tree. It's not very leafy. And so it's very kind of open. And so that's, she judged in a way, Chazal explained, she didn't want there to be people coming to meet her, meeting her individually, men with her. She's the female shofet. There could be a problem of yichud, some type of seclusion. So she had a, you know, an open, you know, and that's the way now, you know, more of the newer type of, you know, principles now are not trying to not sit behind closed doors. They have like big open windows. Everything's about open, open, open. So, which is fine. But why the previous story has Devorah under a tree, and now this Malach is going to meet the next Shofet under a tree? I didn't see any connection. Asher ba'Ofra, we're in a place called Ofra. Asher liyoash avia Ezri, and the place where we're in the tree and the land is owned by a man named Yoash. Yoash, which ends up being it seems to be, I guess this is a type of proof. I don't know if this is this Yoash may have been mentioned in Sefer Yoshua. It says, the footnote here quotes a family, and I don't know if his name is mentioned. I'm looking at it quickly. I'm not seeing it very quickly. But Yoash, the understanding that Yoash comes from a family of Menashe. Yoash is a name that stays in Klal Yisrael for generations, in the sense that eventually one of the kings in Sefer Malachim is named Yoash. He is Avi HaEzri. That seems to be like a family name. Avi HaEzri, he's an Avi, he's from Avi HaEzri, and we actually, right, obviously it's some type of, right, my father is my help, so it's a beautiful type of name. And we make reference to the family name later in the parak. So the scene is coming in on a man named Yoash, and then we hear the Gidon Beno Chovet Chitim Bagas. Gidon, his son, was chovet chitim, was threshing wheat. Bagas is a wine press. Lahanis mipnei bidyan, lahanis. So usually the translation of like vayanos is to run away. Vayanos achutza we have in Bereishis when Yosef is petitioned by the wife of Potiphar and she grabs onto him, so he vayanos achutza, he runs. This sent, and that's actually the way the Mitzudos Tzion defines it, is lahavriach, which means to run away. Now, you don't run away at a wine press. The understanding, and that's even the way the Art Scroll translates it, is to hide. He's hiding. Meaning, when you do an action you could maybe say you're running away in the sense that you're trying to hide the action, because we said that there's a food shortage. So if they got their hands on some wheat, So there's not much you can do with wheat. You have to thresh the wheat, but you have to do that in hiding. He's doing it at a gas. He's doing it at a wine press. Maybe it's that you wouldn't expect to find them there. And it also, the Mefarshim understand that the gas is an extremely heavy piece of machinery, ancient machinery. Could you define, like, what is a machine? It has to involve technology or no?
It has pulleys, it could be a machine.
Right, so I'm saying this, you know, it was a heavy piece of what they would use. Meaning, and so we're going to be seeing that one of the things we're going to highlight is the physical strength of Gideon. Chazal see in this pasuk not only highlighting the physical strength of Gideon, but also the ethical strength of Gideon. The Chazal have an interpretation that we're introduced to the father, and then all of a sudden we hear about the son, right? And that the idea was is that really the father was involved in the threshing process, and his son came to him, Gideon came to him and said, I want to take over. Saying, all right, and Chazal explained that Gideon was basically saying to his father, you're old, if the enemy comes, you're not going to be equipped to maybe run away, to defend yourself. Let me be the one who gets caught. I'll do a better job if I get caught. And he kind of relieves his father of duty. And in that sense, you definitely see a certain proper ethics about Gideon. We'll circle back. But in addition, there's definitely a focus on the physical strength, which, you know, threshing wheat normally is not a right, the way the Chazal understand threshing wheat, they would have, you know, they'd put the wheat on a threshing floor, they would have an animal, usually like an ox, would come and step on the wheat to try to separate the kernels from the chaff, and it would make a big mixture, and then the farmer comes and he throws it up and he uses the wind to blow away the chaff and keep the kernels, right? A lot of the malachos of Shabbos that we learn. So it's not necessarily a strength-based activity. You have to have patience. But the gas, the wine press, they have these wine presses that you could see in Eretz Yisrael that they found from times of old. They're huge pieces of wood that's used and heavy stones that are used to press upon the, you know, you keep the olives crushed, or the wine, the olive presses, the wine presses. They were heavy pieces of machinery, or ancient machinery, and the fact that Gideon is handling it almost sounds like he's handling it by himself. That's impressive. And there's this Malach Hashem, this angel of Hashem is there. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayari love Malach Hashem, so the Malach of Hashem appears to him. To him means Gideon. He's the one on the scene. Vayomer elav, and the Malach says to Gideon, Hashem imcha. Hashem, well, now translated literally, Hashem imcha, Hashem is with you, Gibor hachayel. Almost sounds like he's calling him Gibor hachayel, right? That's the way the art scroll gives you like that word, O. Hashem is with you, O mighty hero. Meaning, I'm calling you Gibor hachayel. Chayel from strength, from power, a chayal, a soldier. That the Mitzvah Tzion says, hachayel means here, inyan koach. Koach, we know, is physical strength. Chazal happened to, right, we have the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Ezehu Gibor, HaKovesh Es Yisro, the one who can control his desires, meaning that from a standpoint of Chazal and the Torah, strength isn't only physical, but really in this, what's needed in this moment in time in terms of electing the next shofet, it's really twofold. On the one hand, you need to be physically strong. You're going to, right, follow the pattern of what we've had. We've had, when Klal Yisrael is taken over by a foreign nation, the shofet pretty much has to be the one to actually lead them into battle and to lead the victory. You know, Ehud is the one who's assassinating the king. And Shamgar sounds like he took on those 600 Plishtis, almost sounds like himself. And so on the one hand, you need the physical power, but if you were going to continue to play that role in terms of inspiring the people to tshuva, so then you need to be, you know, a little bit more of that other type of gibor, a kovish es yitzro, someone who's in control of themselves, someone who's proper, someone who is an example that the people could follow. Gibor HaChayil, and this phrase of Hashem Imcha, it might not be only for now. It may be some element of almost nevuah or foreshadowing, meaning Hashem Imcha, Hashem is with you, and Hashem's going to continue to be with you. And why that's mentioned first, as we're maybe going to see, not for the first time in Jewish history, Gideon doesn't believe in himself that he could be the leader, which again we've seen before, and he's almost like he needs the message of Hashem Imcha right away. So out of the gate, the first words that the Malach of Hashem gives to Gideon is that Hashem is going to be with you. So Hashem is with you now, be with you in the future. Gibor HaChayil, you're a Gibor HaChayil now, but that's also going to be your role in what's to come, meaning you are going to be the Gibor HaChayil. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Elav Gideon. Gideon says back, Be Adoni. Be Adoni is beginning a type of question. The Mitzvot Zion says, Inyan Bakasha, a request. Be Adoni, so the Art Scroll translates it, I beg you. What do you have for be Adoni, those two words, if you can try to see the English? Please, my Lord, okay?
Yeah. Oh my Lord.
Oh my Lord, right? Oh, meaning he's entreating this Malach. And it's amazing, again, we don't know fully what happened, but we also don't know, when a Malach of Hashem talks to you, who do you think is talking to you? Meaning it sounds, right? Does Gideon know it's a Malach of Hashem? Does it look like a Malach? Does it look like a person? And it doesn't seem that Gideon is shocked that a Malach of Hashem is talking to him. He doesn't respond. Now, again, it could be, and we're just not told that. But what's amazing about Gideon is he steps into the role of, as we'll see, being a type of representative for the Jewish people in this moment. Be Adoni, he is respectful. Please, my master, or Bakasha, I'm going to be asking you. V'yesh Hashem imanu. V'yesh Hashem imanu. There is Hashem with us. If Hashem is with us, v'lama mitzasanu chalzos. What happened? Why has all this happened to us? V'aye kol nifla osav. Where are all of his wonders? Asher sipru lanu avoseinu lemor, that our forefathers told us, halo mi mitzrayim heilanu Hashem. Did Hashem not bring us up from Egypt? Va'ata, and now, nitashanu Hashem. Hashem has, right, azavnu, the Mitzvot Zion says. He's forsaken us. He's left us. Va'yitnenu b'chaf Midyan, and he has delivered us into the hand of Midyan. And almost saying a line of, if there is a Hashem, where is he? Where is he? And specifically highlighting, circling back to, I heard all these things about Mitzrayim. So Chazal say that it was actually taking place on Pesach. And when he says, Asher Sipru Lanu Abuseinu, he means like last night. He means like we heard these stories. And where is Hashem now? Now, you could make a form of argument against Gideon that he's being very disrespectful to Hashem in that moment. Chazal are not critical of Gideon for this. The Mefarshim are not critical of Gideon. And in truth, we see two models of Jewish leadership. There is the Jewish leader who is focused on the honor of God at all costs. And there's the Jewish leader who's focused on the honor of Israel, of the people of Israel, at all costs. And it's not always clear which is the model that's better. And maybe different generations call for different models. And things change to the extent that probably the greatest example of a Navi who is so focused on the honor of God at all costs, God over people, is Eliyahu HaNavi. And then the Navi who's perhaps the greatest example of people of Israel at all costs is his student, Elisha. And so there are these two models. Gideon is representing that second model. Of he's willing to almost stand up to this Malach and say, well, where is Hashem? How could it be look at us, look at our situation. Now, obviously, you have to have the full you have to have the full picture. This isn't, you know, Klal Yisrael has been doing great for decades, and their reward is subjugation by Midian. That's not it. They're Ovid Avodah Zarah, but, you know, maybe he's saying, right, and Chazal have an interpretation, specifically by bringing back Mitzrayim, could say as follows. You could say, if the people who left Mitzrayim were so great, then we should still be saved based on their merit. In the S'chus Avos, in the merit of who came before us. And if the people who came from Mitzrayim weren't so great, well, if they were saved, why can't we be saved? And there's almost like this logic that maybe Gidon is putting forward. And he's doing it l'shem shamayim. He's doing it right. He's caring for Klal Yisrael for the right reasons. And when you care for Klal Yisrael for the right reasons, so in many instances, Hashem is willing to look over the fact that you may have been disrespectful to Hashem's honor, because we remember, right? We say Bini Bechori Yisrael. Hashem says that Klal Yisrael is his firstborn. Usually, what happens if someone comes into you and they're defending your child? If they're defending your child, even if they're slightly, maybe not being so respectful to you, but in the process they're defending your child, you pat them on the back and you say thank you. That so, Gidon may be being a little bit disrespectful to Hashem's honor, but it's by stepping up for Klal Yisrael.
And maybe also just asking, what did we do wrong so we could do teshuva?
The lama, maybe saying the lama mitzasanu, meaning almost saying like, why has this happened? And to rectify the situation, maybe, and at least in terms of the flow, it would seem that it works to a certain extent, his argument, but it works from Gidon's perspective. I mean, we already know why is the Malach being sent there. The Malach is being sent there to start the saving. Gidon doesn't know that. We know that. And so it would appear from Gidon's perspective that his words bring about the following sentence, Pasuk Yudalid, Vayifen Elav Hashem, which the Mefarshim debate, Vayifen Elav Hashem, if you translate it literally, it's Hashem turned to him. Vayomer, and he said, capital H, Hashem said, Lech Bechochachaze, go with this strength of yours, V'hoshata es Yisrael mikaf medyan, and save Israel from the grip, from the hand, the kaf, the hand, the grip of Midian. Halo shelachticha, behold, I have sent you. And Rashi, quoting the perhaps you would say the more obvious explanation on Vayifen Elav, Rashi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo, Hashem turned to him himself. In some type of nevuah, in some type of prophecy, some type of direct communication from Hashem to Gidon, meaning what started out as the Malach, and Gidon spoke forward and stepped up for the honor of Israel, what's his reward? Direct communication with Hashem. There is a minority view that he's still being spoken to through an intermediary. And it's just the word of Hashem. Vayifen of Hashem is the word of Hashem, but not Hashem himself. But either way you explain it, it sounds that Gidon is being rewarded for having said what he said, and now it's being pronounced b'chochach hazeh, with this strength. With which strength? It's with that combination, with the physical strength that he has, but also with his koach of being there for Klal Yisrael. You get to be the one, Voshatis Yisrael Mikaf Midyan, that you're going to save Klal Yisrael from the hands of Midyan. Pasuk Tesvav. Vayomer Elav. So according to Rashi's approach, we now have to say Vayomer Elav, Gidon responding to Hashem himself. Be Adonoi. Please, I'm asking again, my master, and maybe the master of the universe, Bama Oshia Es Yisrael. With what am I going to save Yisrael? With what am I going to save the people? Hine Alfi Hadal B'Menashe. Literal translation. Behold my thousand Hadal B'Menashe. Right? It's saying that means a group within a group. Hadal b'Menasseh, the poorest within Menasseh. We'll come back to that in a second. V'anochi hatzair b'beis avi. Additionally, anochi hatzair. I am the youngest, right? Tzair means to be young. That's why, right, the official name of our shul is the Yisrael Hatzair, Shelnu Rishal, or Binu Rishal. That's Yisrael Hatzair. That's young Israel. V'anochi hatzair b'beis avi. I'm the youngest in my father's household. And it would appear that he is saying two things. On the one hand, right, anochi hatzair b'beis avi, I'm like a nothing within my own family. You're asking me to become the leader of the Jewish people. I'm not even a leader in my family. Not only that, he neba alpi hadal b'Menasseh. That, and we are somewhat familiar with the fact that armies and the Israeli army in the time of Tanakh were divided into groups. There was the people in charge of the tens and the fifties and the hundreds and the thousands. There were different divisions. So among the tribes of Menasseh, and here we're echoing, right? When we introduced Yoash, we referenced that they come from Menasseh. So here he's admitting that he comes from Menasseh. And he's saying that we have different groups. The thousand that I'm affiliated with is like the lowest group. It's the least, whether it's that the least qualified soldiers, the least prominent soldiers, it's not the group that's stepping up. One person from that group is not stepping up to be the leader. I'm not going to be taken seriously in my own tribe. Then within that, I'm not even taking seriously my own family. Vanochi atzir beis avi. So he's pushing back, right? It's almost, and the Mefarshim do talk about a certain parallel to Moshe Rabbeinu that we just had in Parsha Shmos. Hashem says, Moshe, you're going to be the leader. And Moshe keeps pushing back. We read, you know, I think it's Paragimel. Most of it is Paragimel in Sefer Shmos, if I'm not mistaken. And we read it like it happened in one chapter. According to Chazal, it was like 3 weeks long. And Moshe Rabbeinu is literally debating Hashem himself and not being confident in being selected as the leader. And we see this here. Gideon is doing the same thing. Pasuk Tazayin, Vayomer Elav Hashem. So Hashem answers back to him like he said originally, but now he's maybe, according to Rashi, hearing it directly, Ki Eyeh Imach. I shall be with you. V'kisas Midyan, you will strike down Midyan, k'ish achad, as if Midyan was one man. Meaning, the same way that it's easy to envision striking down one person, you'll be able to strike down a nation. As difficult as that is, it'll be for you like striking down one person. Yeah, it happens to be, again, we're circling, and there's this parallel to Mitzrayim, so we know that when Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Hashem and he says, you know, the people are going to ask me, what's your name? Hashem, what's your name? What should I tell them? Hashem says, my name is Eya Asher Eya. I will be, I shall be that I shall be. Meaning, I'm with you. And that's what he's saying here, Eya Imach, I'm with you. And that is supposed to continue to be the comfort to Gideon, that he could believe in himself as the leader. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayomer Elav. He says back to him. So Gideon says back to Hashem. Imna matzasi chein be'enecha. If I have found favor in your eyes, v'asisa li os sha'ata medaber imi. And you should do for me an os, a sign, sha'ata midaber imi, that you are speaking with me. And I'll not, continuing just with the same thought, continuing Yuches, al na samush mizeh ad bo yelecha, do not leave until I come back to you. V'hutzeisies min chasi v'inachti lefanecha, all right, I'm going to bring forth, I'm going to bring out a gift, a tribute, a type of korban. V'hinachti lefanecha, and I'm going to place it before you. Vayomar, Hashem responded, Onuchi eshev ad shuvecha. I will stay here, I shall remain until you return. So Gideon. So that's debated. Meaning, Rashi's of the approach that the conversation is happening, Gidon and Hashem, directly. Perhaps it's through Nevuah, right? It's through a state of being of Nevuah, right? Oh, when the Torah, when the Tanakh speaks to us about Hashem communicating, so we go back to a famous idea that the only, and again, it's hard because the Torah always presents us that these conversations are happening like I'm talking to you, but we're supposed to believe one of the tenets of faith, one of the Rambam's principles of faith, is that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was greater than any other prophet. Not only, like we mentioned earlier before, that only Moshe could, let's say, command a commandment of God that would be binding on all generations, but that Moshe's Nevuah was direct, and all other Nevi'im, their Nevuah was indirect. Moshe prophesied in a state of being awake, and other prophets prophesied in a dreamlike type of state. And so, for us to understand that Gidon is receiving this message from Hashem, it means in some type of Nevuah state where Hashem can communicate with him, and he can communicate back. And what Gidon is doing, he's asking for a sign. He's asking for an os. And Gidon is not taken to task by the Mefarshim for doing so. It's not that he didn't believe in Hashem. The understanding is that it's all under the umbrella of he doesn't believe in himself. And that's similar. We actually shared an idea like this on Shabbos, that the signs that Moshe Rabbeinu brings to the Jews in Mitzrayim, when he brings the sign of the staff turning into a snake and then back again, and his hand turning into tzaras when he puts it in and taking it out, and the water turning into water of the Nile, turning into blood, the theme of those signs is not to prove God's existence, but to give chizuk and strength to the people, that you are the people that God actually wants to save. And so the sign that Gidon is asking, right? So the what would be the best way to be critical would be not to do it. The best way to be critical would be like, you're asking for a sign. The answer is no. It's me talking to you. Go and save the Jews. We're going to see an amazing sign that Hashem performs. So it almost seems to be like you work backwards and understand that the sign that Gidon was asking for is not to believe in Hashem, but even it's how he says it. He says, "Sha'ata midaber imi." Right? He asks at the end of Pasuk Yud Zayin, "Asisa li os, do for me the sign, sha'ata midaber imi, that you're speaking to me." It's not that I don't believe that there is an Hashem, and I don't believe that he's involved. But why would he talk to me? Is it really true? Am I hallucinating? Am I dreaming? Is it, you know? And this, according to our assessment of things, this is the first time that Hashem is speaking to him. The first time that Hashem speaks to you, how are you supposed to know that it's actually Hashem? Right? It sounds. Right, so we and there are parallels. There are parallels to that, right? From Moshe Rabbeinu hears the voice at the Sneh, he jumps back. He's not, when you haven't encountered the divine directly, it's overwhelming. And how do you process it? When Shmuel Hanavi, the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel, he's still in the he's still near the Mishkan. He's taking care of Eli, and Hashem calls out to him. So the pasuk, it's almost comical. The pasuk makes it out that he thinks it's Eli. He runs into Eli. He says, "What do you need?" And he says, "I didn't call you." And it happens again. It happens a third time, and then Eli says, "You know, maybe it's Hashem speaking. Maybe it's Hashem speaking. Give it a chance." And Shmuel does so, but he's in such disbelief that Hashem is speaking to him. Because he never experienced it before. When we're about to see the environment, or maybe next time we'll see it, that the environment that Gidon finds himself in, he's not hanging out among, he's not hanging out in some kolo with people who are worshiping Hashem all day. His immediate neighbors are still in the throngs of Avodah Zarah. And in that environment, he is getting chosen by Hashem, and Hashem is talking to him. It only makes sense that he's in disbelief, and so he's asking for a sign that Hashem is talking to him, and Hashem agrees, right? Vayomar Anochi Yeshev Ad Shuvcha. Hashem says, "I'm going to stay here. The presence of Hashem will remain." Pasuk Yates. VeGidon Ba VaYas Gidi Izim VeEfas Kemach Matzos. Gidon comes and he makes for himself a Gidi Izim, a goat, The ephas kemach matzos, a matzos that came from an epha of flour, which now, you know, again, we circle back to matzah. Matzah, again, Chazal understand that it was Pesach. Habasar sam basal, he takes the meat and he puts the meat in a basket. The hamarak sam bafarur, and the marak, which is the liquid, he places in a farur, which is some type of copper pot. Vayotze alav el tachas ha'ela vayagash. He brings it out, and puts it underneath the tree. Vayagash is understood, usually means that he come to approach or to come close. It's like he put it there, he's approaching Hashem with this quasi type of offering. The way that it's set up, you know, in terms of the matzos and the basket with the marak on the side, it definitely seems to be a little bit strange. It's not following, you know, normal procedure of a quasi type of karban or offering. What's necessarily the significance of the way that he sets it up? Meaning, there's no, as far as I remember, obviously, you know, I don't remember everything, but in terms of how a karban is brought, we never really separate the marak, which the Metsudos David, the Metsudos Tzion, and even Rashi says the marak is the rotev. The rotev is usually like that's the word that you use, that we use for like the gravy. You make a whole dish, so there's a lot of liquid. I mean, when you cook, there's liquid, right? Cooking means there's a liquid medium. So the liquid is called a marak. Even in modern Hebrew, marak is soup, right? I think soup. Right. So while you're separating these things and you bake the matzah, right? So usually in most karbanos, the majority of karbanos that involve flour, the flour that's actually offered as a karban is not baked yet. The flour is in that state. It's flour mixed with oil, and some of it is sprinkled onto the mizbeach. The rest is kept by kohanim. There are some karbanos that involve matzah. So I don't know what the significance of what he put together. Maybe it's what he had, you know, but he approaches Hashem with it. Pasachaf. Vayomer elav malach Elokim. The angel of Hashem says to him, so the angel is back, which would lend, you know, that would lend significance to the approach of Rashi. Rashi, who said that when the Pasuk says Vayifen elav Hashem, that Hashem turned to him, and it's Hashem himself, well, that makes sense, right? You first have the malach, then you have Hashem, then you have the malach. If it was the malach the whole time, why wouldn't it keep saying malach the whole time? Why would you change the lingo and take out the word malach and then put it back? So,
not necessarily a person standing.
Correct. But this, at least the text itself would, I think Rashi has an easier time reading the text. So, Vayomer elav malach Elokim, kachas abasar vesamatzos, take the meat, take the matzos, v'hanach al sela halaz, and put them on this rock, on that rock. Halaz is almost like pointing it out. The es hamarak shvoch. And pour out the marak. Pour it on the rock. Pour it over the substance. Over the substance. Vayas Keni does so. Right? Why do you pour it over the substance? So we're going to have a type of miracle take place, that this whole thing's going to be consumed, and almost, you maybe say, echoing what happens in the great miracle of Eliyahu, Bahara Carmel, the more something is soaked in liquid, the more miraculous it is when it goes up in fire. Because fire and liquid... Well, what? That might be true, that the gravy is the best part, but it's all here, certain, meaning no one's eating from this carbon. This is a sign. And so he does so, Vayaskin, he does so, Pasach of Aleph, Vayishlach Malach Hashem, Eskitse Hamish Enes Asher Biado, the Malach Hashem takes the edge of his Mash Enes, right? Lishain is to lean. Hamashenes is a staff that you lean on, like a walking stick, a cane. Asher b'yado that was in his hand. Vayaga b'basar, he touches the meat. Uvamatzos, and the matzos. Vatal ha'esh min hatzur. Fire comes from up from the rock. Vatochlas ha'basar v'samatzos, and it consumes the basar, consumes the matzos. U'malach Hashem halach me'enav. And the Malach Hashem leaves before his eyes. And so the sign that Gideon asks for, he does not ask, he seems to imply that he wants the sign to involve the items that he brings out. He brings out said items, he's told where to put them. There is a, right, if we almost building this, we're building these parallels to the Mitzrayim story. It's involving a staff, it's involving a stick, a miracle is happening by using a stick, touching the stick, this fire. So, and the sign takes place, and what we're going to be kind of a little bit torn with is, and something that we'll circle back to next time, is that we know that the Mishkan is fully functional at this point, and it's in the city of Shiloh. And during the 369 years that Mishkan is Shiloh, you're not allowed to offer karbanos outside of Shiloh. So one could view initially, the way to explain this area or this episode or this part of it is that this is not a karban. This is an os. This is a sign. It happens to involve meat and matzah, which do play a role in the Mishkan, but one could very easily say that this is not a korban, right? There's no mizbeach. A mizbeach is not, a mizbeach is usually, right, the ideal type of mizbeach is has the basis of it is actually earth. Mizbeach adama tasali. Hashem actually wants earth. If not, it's stones that are multiple stones put together. Here it's on one stone. And so the easiest way to explain is this is not a korban, this is a sign. And clearly, the sign is making an impact. So, Be'ez Hashem, next time we will continue in Parak Vav and see Gideon develop and how much he still maybe needs to be a little bit more convinced to a certain extent, or he's going to need to try to convince others to come on the scene. So, Be'ez Hashem, will continue from here.